My name is Jonathan Munro. I'm the deputy editor of ITV News, the news organisation for which Terry Lloyd worked. I knew Terry well. I was his manager, and I and my management colleagues assigned him to cover the war in Iraq, and went to work in the war as what we call a unilateral correspondent. In other words, he wasn't attached to a military unit. Some reporters like to analyse and interpret, and they become specialists in their field. That wasn't Terry's favourite way of working. He liked to be out in the field, witnessing stories, reporting first-hand on what he'd seen, finding real people who were affected by stories and caught up in whatever news he was reporting on. And he was passionate about that sort of thing. In fact, he said just before he went to this war that the one thing that was worse than being sent to war as a reporter was not being sent to war as a reporter, and that really summed up everything that he believed in as a correspondent. So it was with all that experience behind him from wars, from other big foreign stories, and a lot of work on a whole range of other stories over the years, it was with all that experience that he was chosen for this role and went off to cover the war in 2003, starting in Kuwait and then ending up in Iraq. His role was to avoid being embedded with any military unit and to report the war as what we call a unilateral. That is to say, to make his own judgments together with his team about where to go, how to cover the war, and in particular to try to reach the civilian population of southern Iraq who were being affected by the military action being undertaken by the coalition. So when the war started, his mission really was to try to follow the progress of the war from outside the military environment and to report back to viewers about, in particular, the human cost of what was going on in southern Iraq.
My name is Louis Charalambos. I'm a lawyer in London and I represent the ITN war correspondent, Terry Lloyd, who was a veteran war reporter for ITN News. I represent his family following his death in the Iraqi war of recent years. When I was asked to represent his family, it was a great honour that I should do so, and I was asked to do so by his union, the National Union of Journalists. The case raised many important journalistic issues, such as whether a journalist should be always with the military authorities in what is known as the embedded journalist, rather than what is otherwise known as the unilateral journalist. Terry was a unilateral journalist. He was willing to report whatever he saw without having to work with the military authorities.
When the front line of the Allied forces, the British and American forces, began to move north, they wanted to move north just behind the line.
He was driven into the middle of the battlefield by accident, by his driver, who survived, fortunately.
On the first full day of the ground war, that proved to be a very fateful decision. They took a road northbound, heading up in the direction of Basra.
They had been allowed to pass through the American lines and ended up meeting Iraqi troops, and therefore they turned back.
At some stage, they crossed the coalition front line without realizing they'd done so. The American vehicles that made up the front line at that stage were hidden behind sand dunes. They weren't visible from the south.
They turned back on the motorway, and they came back towards the American lines.
Gunfire started from the line of the American tanks, which they now knew were behind them and to the south.
What then happened was that there was an exchange of fire between Iraqi and American troops.
And it was at that point that they realised that they'd crossed the front line.
Terry Lloyd's vehicle and the other vehicle containing journalists got caught up in the middle.
Terry and his cameraman in the first vehicle and the second member of the camera team and their local producer-translator in the second vehicle.
We discovered that Terry Lloyd had been injured by a bullet and was lying on the ground.
He was then picked up by an Iraqi minibus, which was acting as an ambulance and had come down southbound from Basra, and was being put into the back of the minibus when the firing resumed.
And what the inquest discovered, and what the coroner found as a matter of fact, as a matter of truth, was that he was then shot by US soldiers.
We also know now that the interpreter was killed at the same time, but no trace has ever been found of the third member of the team, who is now assumed to have died, one of the camera crew. There was one survivor who was incredibly able to roll to safety and has given us a very detailed account of precisely what happened.
Whilst he was lying in the back of the minibus, a bullet penetrated the minibus and killed him. The bullet that killed him entered his head.
And a civilian vehicle was trying to take him to safety in the Basra area. And it was at that point that we know that he lost his life.
And therefore, that very shocking piece of information became accepted as evidence because the Iraqi minibus driver gave evidence about that.
It took 3 years for that inquest to come before a coroner, but it did so last year.
The US authorities have never told us the full truth about this.
ITN itself, as Terry's employer, launched a very significant inquiry in the area and sent staff in the aftermath of the war to retrace the steps of everybody who was involved and to piece together in some detail exactly what happened.
To date, the American authorities have failed to respond and to allow us any further information.
He decided that Terry was unlawfully killed. Now, that was exactly the verdict that we believed was right and that Terry's family believed was right, because we do take the view, as Terry's employer, that the firing on the Iraqi civilian vehicle by the Americans was an unlawful act, and that was indeed the verdict that the coroner arrived at himself. Terry was a very versatile reporter. He could do all sorts of different stories. He was very much a reporter who liked to be out witnessing the news.
This is on the day that we had the verdict, and we covered the result of the verdict, and then there's also some footage from his last report that he did from Iraq, and an explainer how what exactly happened and where the cars were. So I'll just play that to you. I'll get out of the way so you can film it.
unlawfully killed by American Marines. At last, the truth about what really happened to ITN correspondent Teddy Lloyd.
To my lens, at least, it looked like, you know, there was a tragedy that had happened here.
Teddy Lloyd died in the desolate corner of southern Iraq 3.5 years ago. There is no longer any doubt as to how. As he lay severely wounded, he was shot in the head by a bullet fired from an American tank.
So will his killers face justice? The coroner said he was unlawfully killed, his widow that US Marines were guilty of a despicable, deliberate act, and his daughter said that act was a deeply shocking murder.
He was known to many millions of people.
And will Terry's family get what they want?
The nature of the death, and he did that, and he decided that Terry was unlawfully killed.
We call on the Attorney General and the DPP to commence proceedings to bring the soldiers, including their commanding officers, to justice.
A journalist is allowed to report from a war zone without being embedded with the military authorities.
We will do everything we can to find out what happened.
Indeed, when asked just before the war what was the worst thing about going to war, he said the worst thing about reporting a war was not being asked to go and report it.
The Marines who fired on civilians, and importantly, those who gave the orders, should now stand trial. Under the Geneva Conventions Act, that trial should be for the murder of Terry Lloyd, and nothing less.
Effectively, that a homicide had taken place.
That dreadful day, a group of American journalists embedded with the US military arrived at the scene soon after the attack. One asked for permission to go and help, but he was held back. He said the US military didn't want journalists discovering the truth.
Very often when we go into a war zone, we mark our vehicles with TV or press or with the company name.
We have to continue, and I will continue in the name of those three brave and very courageous and professional people.
Terry filed his last report the day before he was killed.
We'll ask the Pentagon if it will at last cooperate with the investigation.
No story is worth a life, and at present, roving freely to newsgather in Iraq.
These pictures were taken at least 40 minutes after the ITN incident.
We had previously, ourselves, ITN, had tracked down the whereabouts of that vehicle in Basra after the war, and it was then the subject of various forensic and ballistic inquiries. And there's no doubt in the minds of the experts who gave evidence that the ballistics were compatible with those that were used by the US military in that area.
You know, my heart dropped in my chest because it was confirmation that that was the incident, and those were the names of the individuals who were involved. So again, still not knowing truly what had occurred. On the surface, the way that it looked, to my lens at least, it looked like, you know, there was a tragedy that had happened here.
Put a lot of preparation into it, had a lot of research about the local area, talked extensively to his team about the mission that they had before them, and was in constant contact with the news editing system here in London about the best way of executing his assignment, including calling the London news desk several times the night before he was killed to explain exactly what he was trying to do and what their expectations were of the following day. That anybody could believe that they were a threat to the American forces. The American forces had watched them drive north and had watched them turn around and drive towards the south. So we don't accept that the Americans are right when they assert that there was a potential threat to their own safety. The Americans have also said that the white minibus which came to collect Terry and his team to try to take them to hospital could have been a threat to them, but it was clear from the evidence that was given at the inquest that at the time of the fatal shooting, the minibus had been parked while it loaded up Terry and his team onto the vehicle and was then heading northbound back towards Basra, away from the American lines. The minibus wasn't itself marked, but there's no question of it being a threat, in our view, to the American military lines, because it was heading in the wrong direction.
And the hearing was an investigation about the truth of Terry Lloyd's death. In other words, how it is that he was killed and who might have contributed towards that. What the coroner's court heard was that rather than Terry Lloyd meeting his death when he was initially injured, as he was flung from the vehicle, that in fact he was well enough to get up off the ground with the assistance of an Iraqi man who was acting as a good Samaritan. He then got into the vehicle and lay down in it in order so that he could be taken to the hospital in Basra, back through Iraqi lines, and the fact that there was another exchange of fire a few minutes later from the US lines, which killed him. It was a bullet which went through the vehicle and entered Terry Lloyd's head, and that was the bullet which was the cause of his death.
The American military is not minded to assist the British coroner's system in giving evidence on these occasions, and has been repeated in several inquests where the Americans have been responsible for so-called blue-on-blue deaths, which involved the death of British military personnel. He, the coroner, was very critical of that, and there's no doubt in our mind, as Terry's employer, that the Americans' lack of willingness to cooperate at that stage hampered everyone's understanding of precisely what happened that day, and we are very sorry that the Americans took the view that it was better for them not to participate. Terry was a well-known figure. He had been on national television for 20 years, and many of our regular viewers had seen him reporting many, many stories from all over the world in that time. And there was a genuine sense of shock, I think, amongst the viewers about the loss of Terry and his team. Terry filed his last report the day before he was killed, and it included shots of him surveying the border with a pair of binoculars and looking out at the area that they were planning to travel through the following day. And it was very much a report that was in line with his brief. It was about the effect on the local area, about the lie of the land as he saw it. And he filed that piece and then called in to us and told us what he was planning to do the following day. That was the last report he filed.
To date, the American authorities have failed to respond and to allow us any further information. It appears to be American US military policy not to allow their soldiers ever to be investigated by anyone other than themselves, and therefore their blanket denial is in line with other requests made in relation to these kinds of tragedies. What appeared to be dressed up as an accident, in fact, turned out to be an incomplete and partially untruthful account of what went on. And therefore, the initial investigation which was submitted to the coroner was discredited and not believed by the US authority, not believed by the coroner to be a truthful account. All of the soldiers in their statements basically said that they were not responsible for the shooting.
A war is a bloody and dreadful thing, and people who are caught up in it, whether they are in Kuwait or in Iraq or in the Balkans or in Afghanistan, their stories are just as important as the stories of the men who are fighting the war. And unless you make the full picture work for the viewer, you can't reasonably expect them to understand and follow a really complex and fast-moving story, and to give them the information they need to make up their mind about the conduct of the war, the veracity of the war, the rights and wrongs of the war. It's not our job to tell them whether the war is right or wrong. It is our job to report it from as many different perspectives as we can so that they are informed when they're making their opinions known.
The American.
The news of Terry's death was prompted a profound reaction, I think, amongst everybody who knew him, everybody who worked with him, The newsroom was a very somber and solemn and tearful place that day. And I think part of that was the shock. Part of it was losing a popular colleague, a genuinely popular colleague. And indeed, as it became clear over that weekend, Terry was not the only person who died, but we knew on day two that Fred was still missing and was possibly seriously injured and maybe dead, and we knew that Hussein Osman likewise was caught up in the same incident and was unaccounted for. So the process of calling everybody was a deeply distressing process in its own right.
As far as the Lloyd family is concerned, the case will never be closed. We still seek the bringing to justice of those soldiers. The British public were horrified to hear that someone as well known to them as Terry Lloyd should die in this way, and I think there was also a great revulsion in the fact that there seemed to be a cover-up initially. The number of journalists who have been killed in the battlefield has risen year on year, and it's a matter of great concern to journalists and media corporations throughout the world. Although Prime Minister Blair was asked about the case, he essentially managed to duck and give an answer which gave no substance whatsoever, and therefore it was not very satisfactory. Terry Lloyd's death was a war crime, and that was something which was found to be the case by the coroner, and it's something that I agree with and the family agree with, and so do the journalists who support him.
All right. Can they follow you then?
Four members of the team in total: Terry Lloyd, who died, Hussein Osman, who died, Daniel Demoustier, who survived, and the fourth member of the team was a close colleague and friend of Daniel's, Fred Nirak, who was a Belgian-based cameraman, although actually a French citizen, but operates out of an office of ours in Brussels. He was in the second vehicle with Hussein Osman, and mystifyingly, all this time on, absolutely no trace of Fred has ever turned up in any shape or form. We have no idea, in truth, precisely what happened to Fred. We have all accepted a long time ago, I think, that there is now no chance that he survived the incident. We all have theories about what may have happened to him. None of us know. We found various people who said they thought they saw a Western man who was injured, who may have answered that description, but it was a very confusing situation, and I don't think any of those accounts are so solid that we could rely on them. And it is a total mystery about what happened to Fred. And I think, to be honest, the chances of solving that mystery diminish with every week that goes by. But he literally vanished. Somewhere out there there's a solution to the problem, but we haven't yet found a way of tracking him down.
Today's inquest was, of course, Terry Lloyd, but we'd also like to remember our two other colleagues who died with him on the 22nd of March 2003. Hussein Osman, the team's translator, whose remains were found later and then buried in Lebanon, and cameraman Fred Nirak, whose body has never been found. Thank you.